Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the fifth of our double trilogy, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. 1989, directed by William Shatner himself.
And written by William Shatner.
Yeah. And still produced by Harve Bennett. And Harve Bennett also co-wrote it, I think.
Harve Bennett didn't want to produce it.
Well, you know, he has a cameo in it.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, so that's pretty fun. And this is, I think, widely considered to be the worst of the six movies we're watching.
Oh, yes.
And I think I agree, at least so far. You know, I haven't seen the sixth movie recently enough yet to compare it, but I think it really only has to get better.
Yeah, I think the text last night from you was, I think I'm going to scratch the fuck out of this DVD so I never have to watch this movie again.
Well, I don't think my reaction wasn't quite as visceral as that, partly because I really went into it with an open heart on purpose. I've been so having so much fun going through the series. I'm just like, you know what? I'll just take what they give me. I'll just be happy for the reward of yet another Star Trek movie with the characters that I know and love.
Well, I'm just going to go right for the throat right now. Most all of the parts of this movie were stolen from other movies or literature. So I'll just run through it really quickly. The opening, by the way, the opening of this film very much looks to me like a visual adaptation of Canticle for Leibowitz.
Kinda, yeah.
Then there's like the bar at Tatooine.
In Paradise City?
You know, all of this is like ripoffs of other movies. And so very quickly, I had to actually stop and leave the room because I'm like, okay, I'm getting too angry. And there's no reason because this is a silly movie. And it shouldn't make me this angry, except I'm like, Shatner wrote this, except he stole all of it.
And it's, you could see where if you're trying to do an homage to all of the other movies like that, you could do it with a wink and a nudge. But I think the problem with this movie is more scenes were written for comedy than actually succeed as comedy. There aren't a lot of laughs in this movie like Star Trek IV. You know, Star Trek IV was like slapstick comedy, and I mean, there was no gritty element to it. It was all pretty much a lighthearted film, Star Trek IV. And this is kind of that way, but the jokes just fall flat.
Yeah, and Shatner says that part of the problem with it was that they were given a budget, and then the budget was cut. And so it's hard to know how much of that is he was given a budget and the budget was cut, or he was given a budget and he kept blowing past it, and they kept telling him he couldn't do anymore. So, you know, because they shot, you know, for God's sake, they shot at Yosemite. So,
well, you have that, but then, you know, Industrial Light and Magic did not do the effects for this movie. And the effects were like budget effects compared to what we've seen in the other movies.
Well, and we can, I mean, and at the end, so a part of the end scene of the movie, there's supposed to be these big monsters in fire suits that came out of the rocks, and they were chasing Kirk back to the ship. But the suits cost like $350,000 per suit. And there were supposed to be 10 guys. And the city was like, you can't spend $3 million on 10 guys.
And like one, I can only imagine one guy would look ridiculous.
It did look ridiculous. And then it turned out they couldn't actually set the guy on fire because the fire would melt the rubber of the suit. So then they have this rock guy that's supposed to be fire that's chasing Kirk, and they're like, well, then we're just not going to do it. It's like, you know, now it's just ridiculous.
Well, so had this movie been made 10 years later or 15 years later, they would have just done the CG rock guy from Galaxy Quest.
Probably. Which may be where the rock guys came from.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, the television show had pretty bad special effects, too. I mean, they were fine for the time, but, you know, there were a lot of styrofoam rocks and guys in rubber suits. And yet, this is not that. And when you have four movies that precede it, which even the ones that aren't, like, let's just talk about the first one. You know, the motion picture was, I didn't think it had nearly enough action, and I didn't think the plot was all that great, but I think the visuals were pretty spot on all the way through.
Yeah.
There was that little warp drive wormhole thing that I found kind of distracting, but everything else was great. And in this movie, it's just not good at all. Shall we start on the plot?
Sure.
Okay. Here, I'm going to read you the plot with my notes kind of sprinkled in, because this is a movie where I didn't throw a lot of research in there. So when there are things that you have background on, please feel free to jump in.
I will chime in.
Okay. So, cold open. Nimbus 3, the planet of galactic peace. A desert dweller, who to me looked a lot like the Hills Have Eyes guy, but shorter, sees in the distance one of Mario Bava's Tomb of the Blind Dead Knights Templar riding toward him on horseback. The guy on horseback turns out to be the Vulcan Sean Connery, who tells the Hills Have Eyes guy to share his pain. And we learn that the Vulcan is on a quest, and the quest requires a starship. Then we have creepy Vulcan laughter as we pan toward the sun, then we get the fade to the Star Trek title sequence.
How can I repay you for this miracle?
Join my quest.
What is it you seek?
What do you seek? What all men have sought since time began?
The ultimate knowledge.
To find it, we'll need a starship.
A starship? There are no starships on Nimbus 3.
Perhaps I have a way to bring one here.
But how?
Your faith, my friend. There are more of us than you know.
You're a Vulcan.
But I think you're actually right as far as there was nothing unique about that scene. You know, they were telling us where this place was, and it, you know, the guy, the Hills Have Eyes guy, or she heard another podcast call him the Midnight Oil guy.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's not mine. It's I think it's the Roddenberry podcast. I can't remember the name right now, but anyway, it's great. I try not to listen to those before we talk about it on the podcast, but in this case, I wanted to find if they had anything redeeming to talk about this, and there's some. Like, you know, the Hills Have Eyes guy, Midnight Oil guy, is kind of, like, pathetic and sad, and the Vulcan, who I guess they actually offered the role to Sean Connery.
Oh, God.
So, but he was doing Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think. So, no, it was, you know, it was the Indiana Jones movie, where he plays Indiana Jones' dad. So instead, they got this guy who his biggest credit was playing LBJ in some sort of TV movie.
Yeah, and that's where Harv Bennett discovered him and thought that he was a damn good LBJ.
Yeah, and he was fine, but he didn't seem very Vulcan, did he?
He wasn't supposed to be, because he was, you know, he was crazy. He's the anti-Vulcan, you know, he embraces the crazy.
And I guess Shatner wanted to pattern him after faith healers. And the whole religious aspect. By the way, this is going to be the second of five movies where the Enterprise is going to go try to find God. Or at least, yeah. I guess, in the motion picture, they had to substitute God for V'ger because you can't get away with meeting God.
Yeah, but this is Shatner's redemption, you know, good versus evil.
Did you read any of his Tech Wars books?
No.
No, me either. I was just curious if we knew if he had a clever thoughts.
And of those, not having done any research, I suspect that those are not really written by him as much as they're ghost written with him.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. So, that was probably some publishing company's idea of, and I'll tell you what, if you put your name on this and you give us a couple ideas, give us some input, we're going to write a whole bunch of stuff and we'll just give you half of it. Now, again, I'm not knocking the man because, you know, somebody came to me with an offer like that. I would, you know, go right ahead.
Yeah, well, it's like all those horror movies that are Wes Craven presents. Like, they just wanted to throw Wes Craven's name on there. He didn't write the movies. He's not directing the movies.
Yeah, he just showed up for the check.
Yeah. And again, you know, I guess it's good work if you can get it.
But I guess Shatner's, his idea behind this was that this is really, you know, you're searching for God and you find the devil. And in that finding the devil, you prove that God exists. That was his whole theme.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. God exists within, not without.
Turns out it's really not that interesting.
Well, okay. So after the title sequence, we see Captain Kirk free climbing El Capitan in Yosemite. And on the ground level at a campsite, Bones is doing his whinging.
Yeah.
So what I discovered, or what occurred to me, was if I'd finally figured it out, Bones is Barney Fife to Kirk's Andy Taylor. Partly because, you know, DeForest Kelly is kind of skinny in this. He's maybe has always been kind of skinny, but he's
always been kind of runty.
Yeah, and he's not short. He's just skinny, like super Barney Fife skinny. And he also had the neck scarf thing, sort of like Mr. Furley.
Yeah,
like there's a word for it, but I can't think of it.
An ascot?
Yes, an ascot. Yes.
I only know that from Fred of the Mystery Machine and Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, well, it's not a dickie because it's not anything fake. And it may be more of a cowboy thing. It's probably not called an ascot in when you just tie a bandana around there. Although these days, that would just be a gang affiliation advertising.
Yeah,
good times. So Kirk is free climbing El Capitan way up on this rock. Looks very impressive. Trying to suspend my disbelief that William Shatner could actually lift his entire body weight with the arms. But my disbelief is in that took a backseat to Spock showing up in these snazzy kicks.
And by the way, Shatner actually has done mountain climbing, so.
Yeah, but he wasn't doing all that free climbing himself.
No, no.
That was a much younger man doing that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. With a much worse hairpiece. So I really tried. I really did. I really tried to stick with this movie and just be open-minded about it because I really wanted to not hate it. But what the hell is the point of the mountain? Why? None of this is important to the story.
Well, Kirk wanted to get back to nature. He wanted to ride a damn horse and be out in nature because I think, doesn't he live in Montana or something?
Well, Idaho, I think.
Oh, maybe Idaho, yeah. I don't know. So,
Indiana or someplace. So.
Okay, I guess. But anyway, yeah. So, I got him rock climbing. That's fine. He has that fun shirt. Go climb a rock. I actually might use that as the cover art. But okay. The fact that Spock shows up in the levitation boots is so ridiculous, and especially when Kirk falls. And to me, it looked exactly like maybe Sid and Marty Krofft's Land of the Lost type special effects. Or Saturday morning live action Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I can see that.
Where he's just like, ooh, I mean, it is just so ridiculous. And the rocket boots, Velvetation boots, were just, they were ski boots with a number painted on them, and they looked just horrible.
They make an appearance later in the movie, by the way.
It made no sense also. Like the Star Trek techie people were probably really upset about this. Because there's no way that kind of thing can exist and perform in the way that they make it perform. Yeah, and this is like all in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then we cut to the bar in Paradise City, back on Nimbus 3, where the grass is green and the girls are pretty. And we see the human, Klingon, and Romulan representatives. And none of them are looking great. The Klingon guy is an old, fat Klingon general, who we find out later had a pretty impressive career. The human guy is played by a really good actor whose name I don't have written down, but he doesn't get much to work with. And the Romulan chick, I don't even know what that was supposed to be. I mean, she was attractive enough.
She's like Tila Tequila or whatever her name is.
Yeah, exactly. She was attractive.
I wrote down, she's not very Romulan looking.
Not at all. She just looks like...
Is it Tila Tequila? Is that her name?
Yes.
Who was in Wayne's World?
Oh no, you're thinking Tia Carrera. Yes.
That's who I kept thinking it was. I'm like, that could be Tia Carrera.
It could. Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Or two Tila Tequila standing on top of one another.
Yeah. So I was just like, she doesn't. They didn't even try to make her look Romulan. That was the thing. She's like, in no way did she look Romulan. They did nothing.
Yeah.
At least, what's his face, of Korg or Kang or whatever the hell his name was. I've forgotten now because I'm so angry. He looked at least he looked Klingon.
He did.
You know, the Federation dude looked Federation. You know, he looked considerably as Hattery, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, he should have been wearing a fedora. I mean, it's the 23rd century, and he's smoking, for God's sake. So it's not great.
Well, okay.
So then we go back to the campfire scene, and
by the way, his name is David Warner.
Yeah, okay, and he's got some serious cred.
Oh yeah, he's been in a ton of stuff.
I think he's actually in the next movie.
He was in Tron, by the way.
Ah, well,
he's been in tons of stuff. He was also in, he's in tons of stuff.
You know, we should probably do Tron because, if I recall, Tron does not hold up very well.
I have a story about Tron.
Okay, so we'll do a Tron episode. We'll put it on the calendar at some point, and you just have to remember that you have a Tron story. So back to the campfire. By the way, what is it? Sulu and Chekhov are lost in the woods. So that's a little bit of comedy that is not necessary.
Well, but there's a deleted scene because Chekhov and Sulu are actually not at Yosemite.
They are just someplace else?
They're at Mount Rushmore. And there's a fifth president carved onto the mountainside, which is a picture of a black female.
Oh, that's pretty great.
So that's why, you know, when they have to go find Kirk and them, you know, it's like, you know, well, why, you know, you're all right. Because the implication from this cut of the movie is, well, you're all right there. Why would it be a big deal? But they're not even in the same state.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, Kirk and Spock and Bones, they aren't upset that Chekhov and Sulu are gone. They only have a camp for three.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that makes a whole lot of sense, which would have been nice to have in there, or they could have cut them completely out of this part.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. This movie suffers from, like, too much of crap you don't need and not enough crap you do need. Like, it was just edited wrong. And I think if it had been edited just a little differently or some, you know, I think it could have been a much better movie.
Yeah. Well, the crew, and the cast had nothing but nice things to say about Shatner's direction. So yeah, maybe the editing killed him. Yeah, even Takei had really great things to say about his direction. It's funny because I keep reading quotes that DeForest Kelley is like, "Oh, after seeing what these guys went through, well, there's no way I don't want to direct." Well, were they a lot of people asking him to direct? I don't, you don't read about them asking Takei to direct or James Doohan to direct. I don't know. It's still a good quote, I suppose. But here's, yeah. Speaking of good quotes, here's not one of them. We end up with a little scene where Bones tells Kirk that he thought Kirk was going to die. Kirk's like, no, I knew I wasn't going to die.
I wrote down the quote. I've always known I'll die alone.
Yeah, which is kind of a dark thing to express. And then immediately go to the row, row, row your boat scene.
With the marshmallows.
Yes. Marshmallows. What? It was trying to be funny, but it was not working.
It tried too hard. I think that's the problem with this movie, is it wasn't, I don't blame Shatner for all of this. I do blame him for some of this, a good part of it, I would say. But I think this movie suffered from bad writing and bad editing. I think the story just wasn't well written. And maybe that was, it was too much of it was cut apart, or perhaps what we're not getting the true linear story. But like the whole marshmallow thing is just so contrived, and I don't know, it doesn't have any point, because it's not bonding them. It's not bringing them together. You know, it's not giving them that camaraderie that you would have expected from the three of them that you actually get later in the film. So like, you could have not had any of this part of the movie, and it does not negatively impact the movie.
Oh yeah. You could have also had the entire scene with Kirk up on El Capitan and just have him beamed off the mountain and him being irritated about it. That would have been fine.
Yeah. And I wrote down the quote, I've always known I'll die alone. Then I wrote marshmallow, and then I wrote, oh, fuck, they're going to sing.
What do we do after we toast the marshmallow?
We consume them.
I know we consume them. I mean, after that.
Oh. I believe we are required to engage in a ritual known as the sing-along.
That's great. I haven't sung around a campfire since I was a boy in Iowa. What are we going to sing? What, Bones, what are we going to say?
How about Camptown Races?
Pack up your troubles.
Are we leaving, Captain? It's a song title, Spock.
Moon over Rigel 7.
Row, row, row your boat.
Row, row, row your boat. I love row. Do you know row, 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 row your boat?
That song did not come up in my research, Captain.
The lyrics are very simple. It's row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. The doctor and I will start it off, and then when we give you a signal, you jump in. Doctor, if you please.
Don't say I didn't warn you. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Row, merrily, row, merrily, row merrily, row merrily, merrily, lightly down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily.
Come on, Spock. Why didn't you jump in?
I was trying to comprehend the meaning of the words. It's a song, you green-blooded Vulcan. You sing it. The words aren't important. What's important is that you have a good time singing it.
Oh, I am sorry, Doctor. We'll be having a good time.
God, I liked him better before he died.
All right. Let's call it a night. Let's go to bed and just let's get some sleep.
And then I wrote, oh, it's a drunk McCoy. And then and then we get to go to, after drunk McCoy, oh, look, a probe. And so, again, you get to have a probe.
Well, again, yes, this is a probe-heavy series.
But I want to back up a little bit. So you notice the really overhanded, ham-handed, giant, flaming neon sign that was Scotty and Uhura romance?
Yes. Yes, and yet it's not really developed at all. Scotty just looks baffled by the whole thing.
WTF.
First of all, let me just point out that Nichelle Nichols with the gray hair, when I first saw her with the gray hair, I'm like, wow, she has never looked better. She is such a pretty woman.
Yeah, she's aged. She clearly ages well.
Oh, yeah, she's great. And she's spunky, you know? And then later in the movie, Well, later in the movie, she destroys it all for me, but we'll get there when we get there.
Are you talking about the sand dunage?
I am thinking about the fucking fan dance. There is no reason to destroy what is a powerful character by having her do the fucking fan dance for a bunch of Mad Maxers.
Do you know why that's in the movie?
She clearly must have asked for it.
No. She had performed many times and has many, many albums, by the way. She had many albums that were recorded of her singing that sold. And the crew thought it would be a good idea because they needed, again, because the writing was so bad, they needed something to distract in the desert to get the guys to come up. And they're like, well, she's a performer. Why don't we get her to perform? What a better plot device than a bunch of guys on this desert planet that don't really have exotic women and have an exotic woman come and sing for them and entice them, like a siren song. So I give them credit for the concept. The execution, however, was lacking.
Well, I am so glad she was not a professional juggler before, because it would have been super distracting for her to be like, you know, da 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 da. No, it's like, that was Avada Gila.
Bit into my microphone.
Sorry. Yeah. It was so ridiculous. But we're not even to that scene yet. We first have to meet the Klingon captain Claw, who is out.
There's a probe.
Well, yeah, he's
and
out
in their
there.
Ship porn, and the different, you know, different uniforms. And then I wrote down. I must have been drinking. I think I started drinking halfway through this movie, because that may explain my notes. So, because I wrote down revolutionary Che Gavulkan.
That's very nice. See, I was stricken because the last movie that Drew and I talked about was Rockstar. So what I put down was Captain Claw was a lead singer of a hair metal band.
Yeah. And then I wrote down, the ship is derelict, but the shuttle is groovy. And then I wrote WTF Tina Uhuru. And then I wrote, hey, the phaser fire is chunkier.
Well, first of all, it wasn't phaser fire. It was fucking blaster fire from Star Wars. It was exactly the same blaster fire sound, and there's never any phasers that acted like they did in this movie.
No, and there never were again.
Yeah, and it makes no sense. There was no reason for it.
You know what the reason for it was? Because it was stolen from Star Wars.
It was bad.
Again. I know, but the little pipe weapons that the desert dwellers had, that's totally Star Wars.
Well, yeah, and yes, because it was a little Tatooine, but it was also a little Mad Max.
Yeah.
Because he's
that's
like...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I credit Shatner for writing it, but I also, I credit him with being a thief. So now I'm not even veiling my contempt now. It's just spilling out all over.
Oh, no, it's gonna continue. Because the reason they're on at Yosemite and elsewhere is because after the Starship's shakedown cruise after the last movie, the cruise didn't go really well. There was a bunch of problems with the Enterprise, which, by the way, during this entire series of movies, the Enterprise is a piece of shit.
Every time. I wrote down the same thing. I'm like, for fuck's sake, how did we ever make it out of our own solar system?
Oh, man.
Just immolating ourselves.
Well, yeah, like, nothing ever works.
Yeah, like you would think with the giant fleet that's supposed to defend the planet and the universe and the whatever and the hey, that maybe they could make something that didn't break down every 5 minutes.
Oh, no, there is no giant fleet. There's only two ships, and one of them is stuck in space dock, and the other is the Enterprise. It's like
with an admiral captain that can't make up his mind what title he's going to have.
Yeah, it's like, Jim, you're the only crew that's ready in the whole place. Well, we're not ready. Well, you're as close as we can get. So, sorry we had to cancel your leave, but we're going to send you off to this distress
call. What they're really saying is, you're the really only one we think who's expendable enough to go out in a ship that's probably going to end up in a fiery mess of just twisted metal and antimatter.
Yeah, it's like, what is this now? Send Kirk. He'll probably pull through. It'll be, and we don't want to spend, you know, the Enterprise is just barely held together anyway. So they get a distress signal from Nimbus 3 because this crazy Vulcan and his cult have taken over Paradise City and captured the Klingon, Romulan, and human, or Terran, I guess, representatives. And so they send out a distress signal that they're being held as hostages. So the Enterprise is dispatched to go take care of the situation. And they go to Nimbus 3, and we get to see a fan dance. And we get to meet the renegade Vulcan, who, and this wasn't as clever as yours, but I put down his actual given name is Scientology Bok, but they call him Cybok for short.
Oh, that's pretty good too, though.
But he does a little taking the pain away from people, and so he has this group. He's actually brainwashed everybody down there. So this is just a way to get a starship, because they need a starship. So Kirk and his gang of men go down in the shuttle to kind of do an end run, while Chekhov pretends to be the captain to sort of comedic effect. But not
which was,
great.
Which is a good, that's not a terrible military tactic.
No, it's fine.
Except maybe when your ship doesn't work.
Well, and when you have to rely on also tried and true methods. The fan dance, the only reason they did the fan dance is because they couldn't afford in their budget to build a fucking wooden horse to wheel into the freaking Paradise City gate. Because the fact that it was like, the Mad Max meets Benny Hill gang, where the guys are climbing up the sand dune when they see this crazy fan dance. They're like, you know, they're like looking at like each other, like Lenny and Squiggy, and biting their palms and going yik 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 and like rocking up the hill. It's crazy. And what happens when they get to the top and find out that this is a 50-year-old woman? I mean,
well,
okay.
I don't know.
I suppose.
I mean, I don't know. Be careful, because, you know.
Yeah, so Uhura has to whore herself out to show a little leg to distract the guys. And then, so Kirk and the gang.
She was rolling on the river.
So they steal horses, because, of course, all good desert planets have horses. And
yes, very, very equine looking horses at that.
Well, they have little face masks on them so they don't breathe dust, which is very important. And
or they don't actually have to read the plot.
Well, they're too embarrassed. They actually asked for the masks in their contract so that their family wouldn't find out that they started in this movie.
Like they didn't want to be paid scale.
So they ride these horses into town. And there's
they rode them into town, right into the ground.
So then there's a sort of a gunfight, kind of, and Spock has to do a Vulcan pinch on a horse, and that doesn't work out so well. So they are basically, Cybok gets them, and they take the shuttle back to the Enterprise. Well, I guess what, Cybok was arrested? Is that how they got him in the shuttle? I forget this part because there's a betrayal that comes here. Was Cybok a prisoner at this point?
No. They go to rescue. So Kirk and Spock go to rescue the Romulan, the Klingon, and the Federation dude. And when they finally get them all together, Cybok's like, it was an ambush. And so they figure it out, and they make him take him to the shuttle, and then they make Kirk shuttle them back to the Enterprise, which is where they end up having to deal with the Klingon in outer space.
Yes. And so the shuttle has to crash land on the Enterprise.
Yes.
And that's not great special effects.
You think?
No.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because immediately when they go into warp speed right afterward, but Spock ends up betraying Kirk because he can't shoot Cybok.
No.
And actually, by the way,
he can't.
By the way, Kirk, it's funny because there was no phaser set on stun. Kirk tells Spock, damn it, kill him. Shoot him. Kill him here. Murder this man. Spock's like, I can't do that. So Kirk is very angry.
Damn it, Spock. God damn it.
Captain, what I have done...
What you have done is betray every man on the ship.
Worse, I've betrayed you. I do not expect you to forgive me.
Forgive you? I'll knock you on your goddamn ass.
If you think it would help.
You want me to hold him, Jim?
You stay out of this. Why, Spock? Why? All you had to do was pull the trigger.
If I had pulled the trigger, Cyborg would be dead.
I ordered you to defend your ship.
You ordered me to kill my brother.
But the man may be a fellow Vulcan, but that doesn't...
No, Captain, you do not understand. Cyborg also is a son of Sarek.
You mean he's your brother, brother? You made that up.
I did not.
You did too. Cyborg couldn't possibly be your brother because I happen to know for a fact you don't have a brother.
Technically, you are correct. I do not have a brother.
Hey, you see? See?
I have a half-brother.
I gotta sit down.
Let me get this straight. You and Cyborg have the same father, but different mothers.
Exactly. That is correct. Cyborg's mother was a Vulcan princess. Upon her death, Cyborg and I were raised as brothers.
Why didn't you tell us this before?
I was not disposed to discuss matters of a personal nature. For that, I am sorry.
He's sorry, see? He's sorry. That makes everything all right. He's sorry.
Stop it, Jim. Spock can no more kill his own brother than he could kill you. If you want to punish him for what he's done, why don't you throw him in the brig? Besides, we've got bigger problems to deal with. Like how the hell to get out of here? Say one thing, Spock. You never cease to amaze me.
Nor I myself.
But again, this is such bad writing.
Oh, it's horrible.
So bad. Like, these characters wouldn't talk like this. Oh, it just hurts me.
And this is like this conversation in the brig where Kirk's got to sit down. Where does he have to sit down? In the space toilet.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
and then I wrote down, isn't Shakari what they put in coffee?
Well, I think so. Yes, I do think so. That is hilarious.
Yeah, so they end up locked up in the brig with the ridiculous fluorescent tube lights that are supposed to, I don't know what that whole thing was. Like, it was asymmetrical. It's supposed to keep them trapped or something.
Well, hey, if you break one of those fluorescent light tubes, man, you could put out
mercury
an eye.
Mercury poisoning,
put out an eye, all sorts of stuff.
Your microwave not leak again, provide light the way you would like it to. But also, so I also had a hard time believing so now, you know, Cyborg, his minions are now all on board this ship, right? They're still running around the ship and they're all running around trying to get things under control. And at no point do they take it upon themselves to avail themselves of the armory of the ship. They're still using their stupid-ass pipe weapons.
Well, you know, you got to dance with who brung you.
I have an observation when they get into the pain convention. I have a...
Okay. Well, yeah, it's because that's an important part of this movie. But before that, we have Scotty breaking them out of the brig. And then we have this needless, ridiculous slapstick, which I know... In 4, I praise them for some of the slapstick. But the fact that he says, I know the ship like the back of my hand, and then gets knocked unconscious by slamming his head into like a bulkhead, is not funny. It's ridiculous.
Well, except I actually laughed at that. I still laugh at that. I still laugh at it because I hope it was worth it just because it took me out of the movie.
But then we follow that scene, which I could not forgive, but you did. That's fine. To a scene which I am going to state right now, I think is unforgivable by anyone. I'll challenge you to defy me on this. The reappearance of the booster shoes. Like,
yeah.
Stop with the booster shoes.
Well, not only that. Okay, so. What is Spock's role when he wasn't captain?
He's the science officer.
Okay, science. So science and physics both have, you know, they have a kind of a correlation. So I'm a smart Vulcan scientist. I never thought I would hear this word come out of my mouth. I'm a smart Vulcan scientist. I'm a science officer. Now I am a Starfleet captain. I know how things work in the universe, and I don't know how to calculate the trajectory of something when I put boots on that have rockets and then added triple the weight of the capacity of my own body.
Yeah, you're right. He seems kind of befuddled.
Like, I seem to have underestimated. Like, you seem to have underestimated. No, you never did any calculation at all, you moron.
Also, the boots seem to be literally rockets, not some kind of engine, not some kind of something controllable. But I mean, like light the fuse rockets.
Exactly. Let's light this candle.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, you might as well have just strapped on like a Mercury rocket.
Yeah, yeah. These are liquid fuel rocket boots, which are basically, again, just ski boots with the freaking number on them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you. But that was my little nerdy rage. I was like, I have such a hard time believing somebody, one of the characters that can, you know, like, can calculate from memory some of the variables in slingshotting around the sun to make time travel, but can't fucking goddamn use some damn space boots.
No, but that's the thing, is he has to turn to his captain and his fellow officer and say, that wasn't supposed to happen. Like, oh.
You almost sounded like Herb Chamberlain.
Well, anyway, so they are captured again by Cybok. And they, by the way, the one nice set on this ship is, I guess, the observation deck where there's that gigantic ship's wheel. And they used it a lot. They must have really admired that set because they used like 6 or 7 scenes on that set.
It was a pretty set.
It was pretty. So Cybok starts out going to show all of them his pain. The idea is he will show you your pain, you will deal with your pain, and then you'll be released from the burden of your pain. So the first to face the pain is Dr. McCoy. And I don't know about you, but we just had a scene with rocket boots. Before that, we had a scene where Scotty bangs his head on a bulkhead and goes unconscious. Now we're going to where Bones has to euthanize his dying father.
Yeah, and so you may not have ever seen this movie, but this is a scene that's stolen from another classic movie.
Oh, please tell.
Have you ever seen Soylent Green?
I have not.
Oh.
Well, we'll have to talk about Soylent Green at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great movie. It's a good movie. It's not a great movie. But this scene is the bed and the... anyway. Now, not largely. I mean, I'm not saying that it's parallel, but the scene is very similar in feeling. And anyway, it was like, oh, that's Soylent Green. Like, this is stolen too.
Yeah, well, then after that really crushing scene, which, you know, DeForest Kelly does a good job during this part of it.
I'm like, kudos to him, because he was really, I mean, his angst was palpable.
Yeah, well, then we have Spock, who faces his pain, which is the rejection of his own father at his birth.
Oh, and there's another deleted scene here.
Okay.
Because Spock then says, but that's not my pain anymore. I have dealt with that. I'm not that person anymore.
Yeah, well, which would have been...
Ha ha ha, yeah. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it.
Well, which would have been nice, because you kind of get the impression with this cut that Cybok actually works his magic on both Bones and Spock.
Yeah, and at this point I wrote, this is a Benny Hinn convention.
Oh, it is. It's total Benny Hinn.
And the deleted scene is that Spock, as a child, is pleading with Cybok to take him with him, and he's crying, and he's crying and pleading and sobbing. And so you have this adult Leonard Nimoy acting out this child scene, which I thought was like, I'm so glad they deleted this out, because it was difficult to watch as a deleted scene. But in the movie, it would have just been...
Oh, no.
It would have been...
You realize that's stolen from a Harry Chapin song.
Exactly.
Oh, dear Lord.
I told you, there is not much original about this. I was not making it up. So this movie, like, just falls apart on itself. And then I also wrote, is Grace Jones Spock's midwife?
Yes, it's... Well, and we skip right over the cat lady, who was the stripper at the Paradise City Club.
Oh, yeah. Well,
where they basically, there's a kind of a slap fight where she ends up face down in a bunch of water.
She ends up face down in the pool table. Did you notice that? It was literally a pool table.
Oh, that's funny. I did not.
It had billiard balls, but it was water. It was a pool table.
Oh, dear God.
Okay, that's like an 8 on the scissors. A subtlety.
Oh, I didn't even see it. That's how... Oh, my God. Next comes Kirk. And Kirk is like, oh, no, you didn't. I need my pain. I need it. I've been living off this pain. This pain has gotten me more space tail. He's like, yeah. I'm not doing it. So Cyborg basically says, okay, I guess, well, you know, I'm going to peer pressure you into going to Shakari, which actually, when I said it there, it sounds like some sort of Peter Sellers. What was his character's name in Murder by Death?
Inspector Sidney West.
Yes. Going to Shakari. Pleased to meet you, Shakari. Anyway, yeah, that's not great. I'm not the hero in this story. They basically peer pressure Kirk into, you know, hey, we're already headed for this place called Shakari that's behind this big old gas cloud. By the way, gas clouds hide scary stuff in this universe. They should have figured this out.
Yeah, well, you would have thought after Avenger and the big space sphincter or whatever it was.
Yeah, you think? Yeah. Between clouds and probes. There's no sphincter here. No.
It's a pile of shit.
So they go toward this barrier. And this is, of course, this is not a grand 2001 level of special effects. This is not good. It's just not good at all. But the Enterprise breaches the barrier, pursued by a Claws vessel. And they discover a lonely blue planet. So, Cybok, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy journey to the surface. Like, well, let's go meet God. And an entity appears.
Yeah, and I wrote down, oh, it's Godhenge.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I was going to try to figure out whether that was more of a hemorrhoid thing or a prolapse thing, but I think it's just not at all. There's no sphincterage in there. Yeah, so...
Maybe they had some bleaching.
Perhaps. Well, I did note in here that the shuttle number 5 was Galileo and shuttle number 3 is Copernicus, or vice versa.
Right.
Both, by the way, yeah, were scientists who were punished by the Catholic Church. I think the shuttle number 2 was called Scissors, Scissors, Scissors. So
maybe.
So God asks how they breached the barrier.
We sought only your infinite wisdom.
And how did you breach the barrier?
With a starship.
This starship, could it carry my wisdom beyond the barrier?
It could, yes.
Then I shall make use of this starship.
It will be your chariot.
Excuse me.
It will carry my power to every corner of creation.
Excuse me, I'd just like to ask a question. What does God need with a starship?
Bring the ship closer.
I said, what does God need with a starship?
Jim, what are you doing?
I'm asking you a question.
Who is this creature?
Who am I? Don't you know? Aren't you God?
Has his doubt.
You doubt me?
I seek proof.
Jim,
you don't ask the Almighty for his ID.
Then here is the proof you see.
Why is God angry? Why? Why have you done this to my friend?
He doubts me.
You've not answered his question. What does God mean with a starship?
Do you doubt me?
I doubt any God who inflicts pain for his own pleasure. Stop! The god of Shakari would not do this.
Shockery. A vision you created. An eternity I've been imprisoned in this place. This ship. I must have the ship. Now, give me what I want.
Cyborg! This is not the god of Shakari. Or any other god. I don't understand. Reveal yourself to me.
What's wrong? Don't you like this face? I have so many, but this one suits you best.
No! It's not possible.
Bring me the ship or I will destroy you. Bring it closer so that I might join with it. Do it. Or watch these puny things die.
At this point, God's trying to smite everybody, and Cybok realizes his foolishness, and he sacrifices himself by trying to use his Benny Hinn Vulcan mind meld.
Shockery.
Yes. He's going to pull out his Shock-Fu and try to defeat God. So, intent on killing God, Kirk orders Enterprise to fire a photon torpedo at their location.
Crazy Vulcan rhetoric is for churches.
Yeah. Then Spock and McCoy are beamed back aboard the ship because there's not enough power to take back three of people, just two. And Kirk is left on the scene of the planet. And this is where I think you said he was going to be fighting a rock monster or ten rock monsters.
Ten fiery, flaming rock monsters.
Yes.
It was supposed to be his escape from Dante's Inferno.
Oh, well, that would have been nice.
Again, he said... It was supposed to be my escape from Dante's Inferno, which is stolen.
Well, he's just going on a hero's journey, so this is all like Legend of Gilgamesh and whatnot. So, or Homer. So, instead of being chased by fiery rock monsters, which would have been interesting, instead he just seems to go to the shuttle and can't blast out, and that's when the Klingons appear, and just before God kills Kirk, the Klingons kill God with those Star Wars blasters. And then Kirk is beamed aboard the Klingon ship, where Spock and General Kord, who is the fat general from the Paradise City, General Kord beams on board and tells General Klaw that bad, bad Klingon. And he's all sheepish.
Well, and here you get the redemption, because now Kirk is saved by the Klingons.
Yes.
Klingons who have killed his son. And you see Kord is in Star Trek VI. He's an integral character.
Well, I should hope so. Because Star Trek VI is a lot about Klingon Federation unity,
relations.
Right? Yeah. So this is where we get one of the final speeches where Kirk said, "I thought I was going to die." And Spock says, "Not possible. You were never alone." And that's when Kirk kind of uncharacteristically moves to hug Spock. And Spock stops him and says, "Please, Captain, not in front of the Klingons."
Yeah. And then I wrote down, "Oh, for fuck's sake, more singing."
Oh, we see some Enterprise Klingon crews celebrating together. And we see Kirk and Spock and McCoy then on their vacation in Yosemite. And they go out singing, "Row, row, row your boat."
You just going to sit there and block that thing? Or are you going to play some? Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Merrily, merrily, merrily,
your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Merrily, merrily, merrily,
gently down the stream. Merrily,
Which, why did they pick that song?
It's, I don't know.
It has probably no meaning.
It's public domain. I don't know.
Oh, they could have done a sea shanty. They're fucking naval officers, right?
Again, this was stolen. All of this is stolen. So you steal what you know.
It's not great. It's not great at all.
No.
I don't know. Should they be ashamed? Maybe not. But... yeah.
No, I don't. There's no point of being ashamed because it continued. I mean, it made money. By the way, it doubled its money.
Oh yeah. Well, these are going to make money until they really do something horrible.
Yeah, it did not make as money make as much money as number six. In fact, it is the least grossing of all of the movies.
As well, it should be. Like, if they had made another one of these, that would have been the last one they ever would have made of anything.
Well, Star Trek VI made much more money than this did, so.
Well, there is another piece of history that we hadn't talked about yet. This movie was shot at the same time they were shooting The Next Generation. So this was kind of like dueling priorities from Paramount. Because now you have the old crew and then also the new crew. You have, you know, the Next Generation.
Yeah, so resources are divided.
I think so. Yeah, I think that was... And I think they shared some of the same... stuff, but I don't know. I haven't seen The Next Generation recently. Do they use blaster sounds for the phasers, or do they use phaser sounds?
They use phaser sounds.
Which is, they have to.
No, Star Trek The Next Generation is very true to the, I mean, it's very true to the canon. There are some anomalies here and there, but they had seven seasons. Now, I warn people, and I remind myself that the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation is terrible. It is terrible. It was great at the time because it was like, hey, we didn't have something and this is great. But on rewatch, season one is awful. So, you know, it really does get better as the seasons go on. And by season seven, it's pretty good. But the first season is almost unwatchable in spots.
Well, I think the same could be said about like the X-Files.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely rapport there, but some of the scripts and some of the plot arcs are a little weak.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, yeah, and you have shows that, I mean, you have episodes that are, you know, very much in the continuum, and then you have just one off that are, you know, they're still in the unisphere, but they're not really kind of integral in the timeline as much as they're just stories.
Yeah, they're just like Monster of the Week instead of continuing stories.
Yeah.
Right. And Star Trek was like that too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they were part of the story, but they weren't part of the story arc. They didn't advance the story arc at all. All they did was, you know, maybe put some foundation and some character shadowing in there.
Oh yeah, and I don't know enough about The Next Generation. I don't remember enough about it to speak to that part of it, but there are definitely some episodes of The X-Files where Scully and Mulder really don't do anything during the Monster of the Week except sort of be witnesses.
Yeah. So, and of course, you saw that they signed on. Both of them have signed on for 9 episodes of X-Files.
Excellent. Good for them. Is it going to be on Fox?
No idea. Here's hoping it doesn't suck.
Yeah, well.
But, so are we done with the movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so I'll go into the special features.
Please.
I have a track on the DVD, the director's cut, which is Harv Bennett's sales pep talk to the salespeople. Now, why would you ever want this published to anybody but the salespeople? You would never want your audience to see this. It's Harv Bennett saying that this is the best Star Trek ever. There will be never a Star Trek as good as this one. And that this one is by far better than Star Trek IV. How he could look into the camera...
Well, was he talking about strictly the script, or was he really talking about after they put the movie together?
I don't know. I don't know. But the subtitle of this, by the way, is Bill's Turn. Not kidding.
Yeah.
According to Harv Bennett. He didn't want to be... Harv Bennett did not want to direct... Did not want to be part of this film. Because he didn't really believe in it, but he ended up in it anyway. He himself said there was too much excitement and not enough humility.
Yeah, definitely. No humility.
But the only way that Shatner would agree to be in Star Trek IV is if he was able to direct Star Trek V.
Well, and he had like a most favored nations type agreement with Nimoy. Their contracts did that. If one of them got something, the other one got the same thing.
Yeah. Well,
so he was guaranteed a shot if he wanted it.
And apparently the base of the base kind of one of the core of this scripts, which is Finding God, which Shatner echoed, was actually a script that Roddenberry wrote for the TV series, but there was no way he could ever get it to the writers because the network was like, you cannot put that on TV.
Well, and
Finding God in the like, no, you can't, like, there's no possible way you can write that and us get it on the air. It's never going to happen.
Roddenberry was kind of on his way out at this point, as far as like a creative force, because if I remember correctly, didn't he have, like, he was upset with the script and he paid Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke like $5,000 a piece to write why the script wasn't good.
I didn't know that, but that's genius. Yeah.
But still, he was kind of overshouted and he didn't have the power that he did before, so.
No. My money talks. Yeah. And this is a moneymaker.
Oh, yeah. This is a franchise. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to read my notes. God, I was drinking, wasn't I? Hart Bennett said, Shatner has the appetite of a star. That is by far a true statement. But that this was a really, this shows the trinity of family, which is Spock, McCoy, and Kirk. Like, they are this trinity of family.
Yeah, and they have been through this whole movie series.
But this movie was not largely served well by special effects at all.
Yeah, the special effects were crap.
I think that's all my notes. Yeah, that's the termination of my notes there. So
yeah.
I'm turning over my notebook, so there's a nice white blank page I'm staring at the top of for next week, and I'm going to write down right now. I'm writing down Star Trek VI, Star Trek VI, just so I can look at that, and then there's a blank page for next week, and I can just jettison this from my head.
Yeah. See, I'm going to suggest that Star Trek V is the price that we paid to go on this ride.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not.
I was a willing victim, but I will be a willing victim no more. But I wanted to say, because something that I should have mentioned when we started this whole journey exploration into Star Trek and you know, the passing of Leonard Nimoy, is that, you know, I do have favorite parts of seeing Leonard Nimoy in venues other than Star Trek, like Mission Impossible. You know, like, I don't want people to think that, like, you know, my only exposure to Leonard Nimoy was that I only know him from Star Trek, because I don't. I've seen him in other roles, and I loved him in other roles. I loved Mission Impossible.
And Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
So, yeah, I mean, he's been in a ton of stuff, so he wasn't just in Star Trek. So, granted, I mean, that's what most people know him for, and that's what he was probably most famous for, because he was most visibly that. But he did have a bunch, you know, he did act in a lot of stuff. So.
Well, spoilers, did you see Fringe?
No.
Okay, well, he makes an appearance in Fringe.
Huh.
I'll just leave it at
that. I think I tried to watch Fringe, and I just couldn't. I think it was trying too hard to be something that I just couldn't. I'm like, yeah, I can't be bothered with this.
Well, they didn't. If memory serves, they didn't really spring the secret until like the last episode of season one. You don't even know what is going on. And then as soon as you do, you're like, oh, this changes all sorts of stuff. Now what can they do with it?
Huh.
So. But I think at that point, I kind of either lost interest, or like with TV shows, if my schedule changes or, you know, my habits change, I just won't be there next season when it comes out.
Yeah, I know. And it used to be for me, like before the age of the DVR, if they change nights of a show from one night to the next, I'm like, well, I'd never find that show. I'd be like, well, I don't know.
Exactly.
Because it's not on Tuesdays anymore. Oh, well.
Yeah. Oh, let me tell you, I had friends who used to go through the Sunday paper. They got the Sunday paper specifically so they could get the TV guide, and they would go through and highlight what they were going to record on their own VCRs, and they can plan out their whole week of TV viewing.
I remember getting the Sunday paper and getting the individual stapled together TV guide that was its own little tiny news magazine size TV guide, and then constantly having to search for it in the living room because we needed it.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because it also told you what movies are playing on cable. And
Yeah,
it wasn't TV Guide, brand TV Guide, because those were never correct for Alaska anyway during our childhood.
Right. No, never.
So it was what the TV Times or whatever that came in the newspaper.
Yeah, and Anchorage Daily News did it, and it came in as an insert.
Yeah, it was great. Yep. I remember the back had all the movies and little tiny plot summaries.
That really was a great thing.
Yeah, it was very helpful. Of course, now we have the internet where
we got screwed to the satellite tape delay crap.
Well, I mean, Star Trek memories, I believe you had at least one, if not several, Star Trek, The Next Generation episode guides and all of the backstories and things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that was all nerdy stuff. You had to buy expensive books for that. Now it's all internet.
Yeah, no. You can get all the stuff that I have now way cheaper and faster and better. And some of the stuff I have, I have the original Star Trek Next Generation on DVD. And you don't even want to know what I paid for them. I mean, because I bought them season by season when they came out. And I think they were $120 a season.
Oh, I bet. Because it was DVDs. And it was a huge number of them, too.
It's crazy. I mean, the box set each season's it's huge. But now you can get the whole Next Generation on Blu-ray for it's just ridiculous. I didn't even look at it. Derek's like, you should upgrade. I'm like, I'm it's not in my soul to upgrade. I just can't spend that much money again.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, but you can buy the whole thing. You can buy the whole thing for less than you bought all seven seasons before. You know, you're going to spend. For what you paid for one season of The Next Generation, you can get the whole thing on Blu-ray. And I'm just like, I can't do it. It's just I'm not buying another, every time Lucas does something to Star Wars, I'm like, all these people buy another copy of Star Wars. Stop giving him your money. Stop encouraging him to make changes.
Are you excited about the next Star Wars movie?
I haven't seen the last three.
No, but I mean, well, that's probably good, actually.
I never got into Star Wars. I just never did. I mean, yes, I mean, when we lived in California, I remember getting my ass blistered on black vinyl leather car seats after The Empire Strikes Back, I think it was.
It was The Empire Strikes Back, that's for sure.
So, I remember as a family going to these movies, but the Star Wars was never my wheelhouse. It just never resonated with me. And so maybe at some point I should go back and watch them again, but they don't ever hold my allure. They don't ever, it just never draws to me.
Yeah.
Like other people.
Yeah. And there's no reason to, you know, I was considering trying to launch a Dune adventure and decided, there's nothing pressing that I need to devote many, many hours and lots and lots of money to watch the sci-fi Dune thing.
Oh, I've got it.
Well, I know, but still, it's even just the time involved.
Well, it's not that much time.
Well, still, again, it's like the Star Wars thing. It's like, maybe it just didn't hit me right. And did you see the Jodorowsky's Dune or whatever that guy's name is?
Not yet. It's on my list. I'm really excited to go see it. I'm really, 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 I can't wait. But I need to... I want to devote the time to it and be in the proper mindset because it really...
Let me tell you.
I'm a big Dune fan.
Let me tell you.
I'm a big Dune.
Yeah, you're not as big a Dune fan as this guy. Yeah, well, I won't give away the documentary, but he is steeped deep in the Dune.
Oh, I don't doubt it. No, but I think that's the great thing about Frank Herbert is that Herbert's writing wasn't very thinly veiled, but... There was a lot of story there, and he really did a lot of writing, and it was very intricate and very deep. Now, whether or not the meaning ended up being deep is another, thing entirely, but Dune is such a pretty story that it really, the books are really quite, astonishing when you go back and read them, when I've gone back to read them. And, you know, I think I probably mentioned before, the David Lynch Dune is not great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. And of course, there's like an hour missing from it. It is like the, you know, it is the science fiction equivalent of Twin Peaks, where, you know, David Lynch shot it and the studio made him cut like an hour and a half out of it. At which point, the only way to make up for the hour and a half of what he cut was to do like voiceovers and quick updates of the story so that viewers could kind of get alley-ooped from one scene to the next. But it still made it confusing because people are like, what? Why? I don't understand. So it made the movie into this, you know, this big steaming pile of turd that just didn't make any sense. And the Sci-Fi Channel did it right because when they did it, they were very much, much more true to the book. And so watching that series on Sci-Fi got me excited again because I was like, this is how it should have been made. You know, it was a 3-night event on Sci-Fi. They were 2-hour episodes, which means they were like an hour and a half apiece. So they actually have like 4-ish hours of television all said and done. And it was so well done. Now the sequel, which the Children of Dune and Dune Messiah get mixed together into the Children of Dune DVDs. So the second set of Sci-Fi Dune was a combination of two books. And it was pretty good too. It wasn't as good, in my opinion, as the Sci-Fi's rework of Dune itself, but it was pretty good. But the Sci-Fi Dune rework was, it really was like 9, 9.5 out of 10.
And is Dune itself, is that like a self-contained story? Can you begin and end just with Dune and be satisfied?
The book?
Either the book or the Sci-Fi rendition of it.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. You absolutely get a beginning and an end. It is its own contained storyline.
Okay, because I find that important.
Yeah, no. When you finish Dune, you're given with what feels like a resolute ending. It doesn't have to be, but it is.
Well, I guess I'll keep it on my list then.
Yeah, if you have the chance. I mean, I have, shamefully, like 3 copies of it, so. I could probably send you one.
Yeah, well.
I bought one, and then I couldn't find it, and I bought another, and then it came out on Blu-ray, and I bought it on Blu-ray.
So, oh, okay. Was, well, yeah. we'll have to talk. Anyway. Well, anything else about Star Trek V?
No, I think we beat that horse to death.
Okay, so next week, next week for us, but our next episode will be the final of the Star Trek series that we're covering, and then we'll probably... but recap a little bit about how he felt about the entire thing.
Yeah. And then we, you know, can probably talk a little bit because, you know, Nimoy's in both of the, is he in both of the new ones?
Well, he's in the first one. I know that.
Yeah. I think he's in the second one too. I'll have to go back and look.
Well, we can do the reboots too.
No, I want to, the reboots are the reboots and I want to leave those alone. Cause even though Spock, even though Nimoy's in them, the stories aren't about him.
Yeah. Plus, so, we can always go back to the reboots later.
Yeah, we probably should, especially as the third movie comes out. So I think we can do that when the third movie comes out. But 6 weeks of Star Trek's probably enough for anybody, because I imagine anybody who listens regularly. I apologize now, everybody. This is my fault. So
no, so. I think April is going to be the month of Captain Kirk, and May will be the month of Hannibal Lecter. As far as listeners go.
One egotistical tyrant to the next.
Something. So, anyway, well, I will talk to you next week. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.